Speaking of radio, the Jack Benny program.
Ladies and gentlemen, our story starts with the birth of Jack Benny in the year 1894. Just 39 years ago. It all happened in the little town of Waukegan, Illinois. The proud parents gazed with delight on the blue-eyed baby. And it was at this moment that Jack Benny's voice was heard for the first time.
Look at him, Papa. He's so cute.
Yes. We'll call him Jackie.
Doctor, I want to ask you something. Oh, I know all parents think their children are unusual, but honestly, Doctor, isn't our Jackie different from most babies? Little Jackie, Papa, he's got your mouth.
And he's got your nose.
And he's got your eyes.
And he's got your ears.
And look at his hair.
See, that's mine. It slipped off.
Jackie, quiet now.
Now, Mr. Benny, about my feet.
Don't worry, Doctor. Just mail your bill, and my son Jackie will send you a check.
Oh, thank you very much. Wait a minute. Your son here, Jackie, he's only a few minutes old. How can he send me a check?
I don't know how he did it, but he already saved $800.
And so the little baby began to grow and make rapid progress. At the age of 6 months, he astounded medical science because he had 32 teeth. All uppers. But Jackie was a happy little child, and all day long he used to sit in his crib playing with his toys. As he grew older, his parents gave him everything he wanted. But Jack wasn't an only child. He had a younger sister named Florence. Today, he has an older sister named Florence. The years passed, and finally, Jackie entered school. As a student, he was exceptionally bright, particularly in arithmetic.
And now for the next question, I will call on Jackie Benny.
Yes, teacher.
Now, Jackie, if you loan $10 to Albert and $5 to Irving and $15 to Tommy, and they all paid you back at once, how much money would you have?
$31.
I'm sorry, Jackie, but the correct answer is $30.
What about the interest?
Oh, yes, I forgot. And that reminds me, Jackie, I'll pay you the money I owe you Friday.
Good. Good, good. Then I'll give you back your wristwatch.
It was easy to see that there was something about Jackie that was different from other boys. In his class, there was one little boy who lived near the stockyards. There was another whose home was above a livery stable. Still another who lived next door to a glue factory. Yet Jackie was the only kid in the class called Stinky. However, somehow he seemed to know that he was destined for a musical career. And for the next few years, he took violin lessons regularly.
No, no, no. How many times must I tell you? Smoothly, smoothly.
I'm sorry.
Well, play it again. Only this time, hold the bow with one hand. You're not Ty Cobb.
I'll try.
Not today. The lesson she is over.
Oh, well. Goodbye, Professor.
Wait. You did not pay me.
Huh?
Mr. Benny, I want my money.
Well, Jack was persistent about his violin playing. He took lessons year...
Mr. Benny, my money.
After year...
Mr. Benny, my money.
After year...
Please, Mr. Benny, my money.
It finally came the day of his graduation from elementary school. Oh, it was a proud moment for Jack and his parents. That was the day that he put on his first pair of long pants. He looked kind of bulky over his diapers. But as he was about to leave the house, his parents looked at him proudly and said,
Jackie, we're proud of you.
Thanks, Mother. And I'm so excited.
Look at him, Mama. Doesn't he look handsome?
Oh, he should look handsome. He's got your mouth.
And he's got your nose.
And he's got your eyes.
And he's still got my hair.
You'll get it. You'll get it. Let him graduate first.
We want to get there early. He's going to play a violin solo.
Teachers and fellow graduates, your kind reception to my musical offering has filled my little heart with joy. But I don't deserve all this applause alone. Some of the glory must be shared by my music teacher. That wonderful man, that brilliant genius, that great...
Never mind the compliments, I want my money!
Jack Benny's schooling and violin study was interrupted by World War I when he entered the armed forces. He was really much too young to go, but his father was on the draft board. Oh. And so, early in 1917, we find Jack Benny no longer a boy, but a man, ready to enter the Navy.
Goodbye, Papa.
Go already. Over and Jack went home, but his parents had moved. And so he decided on vaudeville as a career. It was about this time that many changes took place in the entertainment world. New innovations had come along, the radio talking pictures. And in one picture called Lucky Boy, a handsome young leading man named Georgie Jessel scored an immediate smash hit when he sang One Bright and Guiding Light. That taught me
Georgie.
Wrong from right, I found in my mother's
Georgie.
Eyes. Those baby tales she told.
Georgie.
That the road all paved with gold.
Georgie, me. It's my life story.
I'm sorry. With the advent of a radio, many new stars were made overnight. And one of the brightest was the man who always opened his show with...
Hello again.
From this he became a star? However, when Jack realized that he was a big hit in radio, he decided to get his own program. And first, he looked for an announcer. He didn't have to look far because Don Wilson was everywhere.
So you want to be a radio announcer, eh?
Yes, sir.
Have you had any experience?
A little.
Well, before I hire you, I'd like an audition, please.
Yes, sir. Listen to this. L-S-M-F-T, L-S-M-F-T, Lucky Strike means fine tobacco.
Very good, very good.
Friends, we say Lucky's taste better than any other cigarette. And you have a perfect right to know why we make that statement.
Well, we certainly do.
So here are the facts. The taste of anything depends on two things. First, what it's made of. Second, how it's put together.
Well, that's logical.
Now, to get better taste in a cigarette... you must begin with fine tobacco. That's right, there's no substitute for fine tobacco. And don't let anybody tell you different.
Oh, I won't. I won't. And take your knee out of my stomach.
So L-S-M-F-T, yes, Lucky Strike means fine tobacco.
And so Don Wilson was hired, even though at that time Jack was on for Jell-O. But one of the freshest things about Jack's show was the new talent that he always found for it. And he usually met these supporting players in unusual places. For instance, one day while he was shopping...
Oh, miss, do you have dental floss?
Yes, the May Company has everything. Mm. And say, you have all uppers, haven't you?
Hey, you notice everything. You're pretty cute. How about having dinner with me tonight?
I'm sorry, but I never let strangers buy me dinner.
Good, good. You're my type.
Look, mister, you better stop annoying me.
Hey, Mary, you want me to come over there and punch him in the nose?
It's all right, babe. I can handle him myself.
Yes, and that was how Jack first met Mary Livingston. He took her away from the May Company and made her a star. Then one day, Jack was crossing Vine Street. He stepped off the curb and...
Whoops, sorry. I almost tripped over you. I didn't see you.
I didn't see you either. I was face down.
And so, Phil Harris joined the show. Now that Jack had an orchestra, he needed a singer, and he auditioned dozens of them. One day, he listened to a newcomer, a shy, apple-cheeked young lad with the face of a cherub and a beautiful voice. And when he finished singing, Jack said,
"So your name is Dennis Day?"
"Yeah, you want to make something out of it?"
Jack hired this talented young tenor, and after 4 or 5 years, with no outside help, he almost drove Jack nuts. Now with his cast completed, Jack decided to move into a new house in Beverly Hills with his faithful Verrett, Rochester.
Boss, this house is sure beautiful.
Yes, it is, Rochester. But you know, I've been thinking.
About what?
Well, a house isn't really a home without a woman.
Want me to get married?
Never mind.
And so Jack moved into his new home, which he still resides. The house is located in Beverly Hills. The day he moved in, his next-door neighbor exclaimed,
About the fence, Benita, do you honestly think that 20 feet will be high enough?
And so, distinguished guests and ladies and gentlemen, that brings us up to the present here at Jack Benny's testimonial dinner. And while we have kidded him tonight about those various characteristics he has assumed on his radio programs merely for the purpose of making you laugh, you who know him best will say of Jack Benny that he is a fine comedian and a fine man. I thank you.
That was Fine and Dandy, played by the orchestra. And now, ladies and gentlemen, I bring you a man...
Hey, wait a minute, Jack. What's the idea?
There's going to be a little switch, Don. Tonight, I'm going to introduce you.
Well...
And now, ladies and gentlemen, I bring you a man who today is celebrating his 16th anniversary in radio. Here he is, folks, 300 pounds of sugar and spice and everything nice, Don Wilson. There you are, Don.
Well, thanks, everybody. And thank you, too, Jack, for that lovely tribute. But really, you didn't have to do it.
Oh, yes, I did, Don. Any man who can spend 16 years in radio and never miss a broadcast, a laugh, or a meal deserves an ovation. Today is your day, Don, and nothing is too good for you.
Oh, I'm glad to hear you say that, Jack, because for some time now, I've been planning to ask you for a raise. I think I should get more money, don't you?
What's that, Don?
I said I think I deserve more money.
You sure do. Well, let's get on with the program. Tell me, Don, I'm sure a lot of our listeners would like to know, how did you happen to get into radio? Were you always an announcer?
No, Jack. I started out on an exercise program. I was known as Happy Don the Muscle Builder.
Oh, setting up exercises, eh?
Yeah, I used to start out the program by saying to my audience, bend over and touch your toes.
Yeah.
Yes, sir, and then I'd bend over with them.
Oh, sure, sure, I can imagine.
Now, wait a minute, Jack. I'm still pretty limber. I can bend over and touch the floor right now.
Oh, yeah? Don, if you were an old maid, you'd have to go down in the basement, stand on a barrel, and bore a hole in the ceiling before you could look under the bed. But this is your anniversary, Don, so let's change the subject.
Okay, Jack, how about that raise? I think I deserve it, don't you?
Yes, I'm agreeing, but not spending.
We were out for General Foods and Jell-O for 10 years.
Uh-huh.
And Lucky Strike came after then. Lucky Strike sponsored Jack and the Benny Show for 15 years. They were the greatest longevity of any client on the show. General Foods being 10 years for Jell-O. Mm-hmm. And 15 years for Lucky Strike.
Announcer Dan Wilson.
The sponsor, I think, was very well aware of the fact of Benny's integrity and his great showmanship and his devout attention that he gave to taste that he did on the show. And that was one thing that got Jack a great children's audience.
Mm-hmm.
Because he never tolerated anything on the air that was the least bit off color in those days. And it was a show that the whole family could listen to with no compunctions whatsoever.
When you started to work for Jack, were you hired by the network or by the agency?
I was on staff at NBC, as everybody on the announcing staff had to be. I was under their management. But Jack was the man that did the hiring. He negotiated the whole deal.
Did he set your salary then, at that time?
Well, I guess you would say he did. But Jack had such a reputation of being a skinflint. And all I can say is that the Jack Benny that I knew had all the great attributes of a great human being, such as generosity, tolerance, interest, and he was back of you 100%. So I wasn't the, as time went on, I wasn't the recipient of his penuriousness that he was so reputed to be on the air.
Yet over the course of time on radio and even into television, a lot of the great, of course, this is Jack's character coming out in the shows, but in so many instances, there was so many stories around Don Wilson's salary, which was next to nothing, and how he locked you in a room until it was time for you to sign, you know, until you would sign the new contract at the salary.
That's right.
And all of that sort of thing.
You have a great memory. You've done a lot of homework, haven't you?
Ladies and gentlemen, very few things go on in Mr. Benny's house that I don't know about. Last Tuesday morning at 9 o'clock, Mr. Don Wilson came over to discuss his new contract with Mr. Benny. 5 hours later, they were still at it in the den behind locked doors.
Now look, Don. I've given in to you on a lot of things. You have the right to do another show. I give you full credit in all our programs. You can take a 2-week vacation each year. You even have the right to approve of the scripts. Now, what else could you possibly want?
Money.
Don, there are things much more important than money.
Well, maybe so, Jack.
No, wait a minute. You place too much importance on money. Don't you realize you can't take it with you?
I know, but I'd like to finger a little of it while I'm here.
Oh. Well, Don, everything else in the contract is satisfactory, isn't it?
Well, everything except Clause 11.
Clause 11?
Yes. That's the one that says I'm not allowed to eat during the broadcast.
Oh. Well, Don, I had that clause put in because of what happened a couple of weeks ago when you were eating a hamburger during the first part of the show.
So what if I ate a hamburger? I did my commercial all right, didn't I?
Yes, but your pear-shaped tones came out with onions on them. Remember, you can't do your level best with mustard dripping on your vest. So the no eating clause stays in.
Well, that's not important. That's not important. But what about the money?
Don, I've made my final offer. You don't have to sign it now. I'll go out and leave you alone so you can think it over all by yourself. I don't know. Sometimes Don can be so stubborn that
Say, boss!
What is it, Rochester?
Has he signed it yet?
Not yet.
You want me to heat up the Brandon irons?
Oh, stop being silly. Anyway, I'm using the hunger treatment on him.
It didn't take me long to realize that it was the happiest move that I would ever have the opportunity of taking advantage of, and I snapped at it. There was one show, radio show, many, many years ago that I can recall very vividly. that Jack did not speak one word on the show or on a microphone until the last 5 minutes of the show. This was the great generosity of this great man. Other comedians, if in rehearsal a supporting player got the laugh line, the star had that line on the air, not the supporting player. Jack was the reverse. And all but 5 minutes, Jack was not on the air. We talked about him. We kidded him. He sat over with that kind of sheepish expression on his face on a chair to one side. And all the gags bounced off of him.
Mm-hmm.
But he never uttered one word, which was an amazing trait, really.
Ladies and gentlemen, we spent the last 3 hours going through Beverly Hills, and now we're in the heart of Hollywood. Continuing down Sunset Boulevard, I'd like to point out the famous Palladium Ballroom.
Goodness, Henry, this has been one of the most perfect sightseeing tours I've ever been on.
Yeah, and to think the Chamber of Commerce supplies this bus free.
And now we come to one of Hollywood's most noted buildings occupying this full block. It's the nation's foremost radio network, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
This is where I get off, driver. I get off here. Open the door, please.
What did you say, mister?
I said, this is where I get off.
Get off? The Chamber of Commerce goes to the trouble of running a free bus so you tourists can see the city, and in the middle of a tour, you want to get off.
Open the door, please.
But you haven't seen everything yet. From here, we go to Figueroa Street, where we'll pose for a moment in front of a statue of Honest John, the original Ghost Rider in the sky.
Open the door, please.
Then we pass the City Hall on our way to the Los Angeles Police Department, where you'll see all the officers sitting around a table pointing at each other.
Open the door, please. I've got to get off here.
But you haven't lived until you've seen the sun as it slowly sinks its golden rays into the blue goo of the La Brea Tar Pits.
I've seen it. Now open the door.
But, mister...
Let him off.
Yeah, let him off. That arguing is lousing up our honeymoon.
All right, bud. If you're going to get off, get off.
Thanks.
Driver, I left my script on the bus. Hey, driver.
All of us like Rochester, Phil Harris, Don Wilson, we only had about a page and a half of dialogue on the show.
Singer Dennis Day.
But you better believe that it was the best dialogue that possibly could be written. Because Jack knew it was good for himself and for all of the characters on the show. No matter how many laughs, he was very happy with all the laughs you might get. And when the show was over, many people would say, hey, did you hear Dennis or did you hear Phil Harris on the Jack Benny show last night? It was still the Jack Benny show because he was the catalyst who manipulated the whole thing. The jokes bounced off of him. He was the butt of most of the jokes. And we got the laughs, but it's still, he was a genius in that sense.
In many cases, a show would get well underway before he would even make an appearance.
That's true, yeah. That's very true. And then he had a great facility of mentioning something. You know, I wonder where I put that book or something like that, or where Dennis would be, or whatever's going to happen. And all of a sudden, when we're practically to the end of the show, that would come in another roundabout way that made a hilarious ending to the whole thing. He had that great facility. So he was really, in the early days when I was with Jack, he used to work with the writers on all the ideas and the dialogue and everything else. And then when we'd come in to read, usually on a Wednesday or a Thursday, we'd have our first reading. And after the reading was over, we'd leave and go home. And then they would edit it and tighten it up. And my gosh, every time, every script would be 200% better once they worked it over. And Jack would work. He says, I don't like this. We've got to replace this. Or bring in, you know, new dialogue or let's keep this. And this worked fine. But he was a great editor of scripts. This is one of the great sense of comedy that the man had. Not only was an editor, but what a timer, a master timer. He knew how to milk, how long to milk a laugh, and when to stop, when he had enough, or the public had enough, the audience. And this was a great thing about him.
And don't do anything silly right now, because I was just going to talk about you.
You were?
Yeah. I was going to say, Dennis, that you're talented, clever, versatile, and you're looked up to as one of the most promising personalities in radio. And you know what that means coming from me.
Yeah, when you're all washed up, you'll want me to give you a job.
Dennis, Jack really meant what he said, and I feel the same way. You're not only a fine entertainer, but you're modest, considerate, kind, and one of the nicest boys I've ever met.
Oh, I can understand it coming from you.
Why?
You're nuts about me.
Well, he was a national institution. Yeah. I never heard anyone have a bad word to say about Jack Benny. Everyone always loved him. And he was a very kind and very gentle man. This is what's on his tomb. Here lies a gentleman, which epitomizes really what Jack Benny was, a very kind and gentle man.
Did you find him that way on that first Jack Benny show?
Oh,
that
yes,
you did?
Yeah, because, you know, I was scared stiff. After all, I'd had no great experience as far as singing is concerned with orchestras or appearing on Here's the Top radio show in the whole country. And everyone was listening, so I was just very nervous and very scared. And I think that's why they brought in Verna Felton, who played the part of my mother. It was a buffer between myself and Jack until I got more confidence myself on the show. So they used her in the first year, I would say, about probably 16 shows. And then finally I started to get a little more confidence in myself.
She was on that quite a bit over the years.
They referred to her. Many times she wasn't even on the show, but Jack would refer to her, oh, your mother, you know, and I might say something about she wants me to get a raise, or she was always you know, either a plumber's helper or a carpenter. She was a woman who could do anything. And he would refer to her many times, or I would. And it felt like a living presence was on the show.
Hello?
That's the door buzzer.
Oh. Come in. Oh, hello, Dennis.
Hello, everybody.
Look, Jack, Dennis brought his father with him.
Imagine him coming here in his old greasy overalls. How do you do, Mr. Day?
That's my mother. She just came from work.
How do you do, Mrs. Day?
How do you do?
Now, remember, Mother, you promised you wouldn't hit him.
Hit me?
Yeah, there's something about you that brings out the beast in her.
Now, Mrs. Day, I don't know what you have in mind, but I'd like to talk to you some other time. Right now, I want to listen
to... You listen to me first.
All right, and put down that wrench. Now, what is it?
Well, Mr. Benny, now that my Dennis is a star on his own show, you must uphold his dignity by giving him more lines, more songs, his own dressing room. And at all times, he must be treated with the utmost respect.
Yeah, utmost.
Now, look, Mrs. Day, now you listen to me. You can run Dennis's life if you want to, but you're not going to run mine.
Gee, Mr. Benny, my father wouldn't dare talk to her like that.
Your father. What a weakling he must be. Where'd your mother ever get him, anyway?
Eastern Columbia, Broadway at Night.
Gee, they have everything. Now, Mrs. Day, look, I don't want to talk any more about it, and that's settled.
All right, if that's the way you feel about it, come on, Dennis, we'll go home.
Dennis stays right here. I want to hear the song he's going to do on my program.
Very well, but I'm leaving. I'll wait for you outside, Dennis. Goodbye!
Gee, she's a character, isn't she?
I'll say she is. Now, go ahead, Dennis. I want to hear the song you're going to do.
Okay.
I have trouble with everybody.
You keep coming back like a song, a song that keeps saying, remember. The sweet used to be, that was one.
after a while, and when I got more confidence, I used to do dialects during World War II. I used to do Rommel popping out of a tank, and, so, you know, Japanese, arigato gozaimasu, do itashimashite. Oh, you bet you. And we do all kinds of dialects and impressions. I did Parker Fenley from the Fred Allen, howdy, bub. You know, all of these various characters.
I wonder if Dennis Day, I mean Titus Day, is at home. He's always so moody.
Howdy, bub.
Well, Mr. Day, I see you're at home.
Yep, day in and day out, days in.
Yeah, I see, but you say your eyes look all red.
Been crying, bub, reading a sad book.
What's the title of it?
Forever Amber.
But Titus, Forever Amber isn't a sad book.
Tis when you're my age, bub.
Well, I have a very important question to ask you tonight. Who do you think is the better comedian, Fred Allen or Jack Benny?
Well, bub, that's a moot question.
Moot question?
Yep. Moot be Allen, moot be Benny.
I see. Well, which one do you consider the better comedian?
Never hear them myself. When they come on, I put my radio out in the hen house.
In the hen house? Why?
Steps up production. Every time Allen and Benny lay an egg, my hens try to match it.
And that really increases your egg production?
Did up to last Sunday.
What happened last Sunday?
All my hens killed themselves straining. So long, boss.
I'll be in the... There's the phone. I'll get it. Hello?
Hello, old boy. This is Ronald Coleman.
Ronald Coleman? Well, Ronnie, how are you?
Splendid. Splendid, thank you.
Good, good. How's Benita?
Who?
Benita, your wife.
Oh, I thought you said Santa Anita. Benita's fine.
Good, good.
Oh, by the way, Jack, what are you doing tonight?
Nothing. Why?
Well, Benita and I are having a little party at the house, and we'd love to have you come over.
Tonight? Gee, that'll be swell, Ronnie. What time should I be there?
Just a minute. I'll ask Santa Anita.
Who?
Benita, my wife.
Oh.
Hey, Phil, what time shall I tell him to be there?
9 o'clock, girl with him.
Hello, Jack. Benita says 9 would be fine and to bring your lady friend with you.
You mean my girl, Glasgow?
Yes, to meet her.
Costume.
Oh, by the way, come over tonight. We win.
What?
A costume party, you know.
Oh, a costume party. Gee, that'll be fun. We'll be there at 9 o'clock sharp. Goodbye, Ronnie.
Goodbye, Jack.
Hey, Rochester. Rochester, I've been invited over to Mr. and Mrs. Coleman's for a party tonight.
You want me to get your tuxedo?
No, this is a costume party. Gee, I don't know how to dress.
Why don't you wear your toupee upside down and go as a bird's nest?
And now, folks, what's this? Hitler walks out to the pitcher's mound to talk to Tojo. It seems they got their signals crossed, and Hitler's worried.
Was ist los, Schweinhund? Und kann auch den Verstand zu greifen und versehen, der keine Verluten, Verstunden, Verluten, zum Kampf. So sorry, please. Versteifen Sie Roden, versteht nicht. Eine Minute, Verstunde, Roden, verteilt nicht. Ah, shut up!
Sound effects were all important. I know Jack had a great sense of that. Many a time where it was a slap in the face. I remember once he was trying to get the sound effect man to make the proper sound. It just didn't come, and he kept, no, that's not it. And by George, when the sound effect man finally hit it, the right sound effect of the slap in the face, and Jack says, that's it. You knew instinctively yourself in listening that he was absolutely right. This is a tremendous thing. He was very meticulous.
Ladies and gentlemen, inasmuch as this evening marks the halfway point of our radio season, I think it only fair that we pay tribute to the man who has contributed his invaluable services to the Jell-O Show.
Well...
A man upon whose broad shoulders rests the burden of maintaining the high comedy level of this program.
Gee.
And here he is, folks, our sound effects man, Mr. Virgil Reimer.
Hey, what is this?
Hello again. This is Virgil Reimer talking. And folks, I want to tell you this is the happiest
day
of my
life. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. What's going on here, Don?
Well, Jack, I thought the public might be sort of tired of hearing me introduce you week after week. So for a switch, I thought I'd introduce one of the men behind the scenes.
Oh, you thought you'd pull a little surprise on your old boss, huh?
You certainly fell for it.
I did at that. Well, Don, I've got a little surprise for you, too. Remember one day in New York when I was having lunch with Harry Von Zell?
Uh-huh.
And you got all upset about it, and I told you not to worry?
Yes.
Well, knit your eyebrows, brother. The heat's on again. Now, let's get going with the program.
Okay. Hello again. This is Virgil Reimer talking. And, folks, a funny thing happened to me on the way...
Virgil! Go away, will you, and stick to your sound effect.
Oh, give him a chance, Jack. After all, I introduced him, so let him say a few words.
Oh, all right. Go ahead, Virgil, but make it snappy.
Thanks, chum. Ladies and gentlemen, a funny thing happened to me on the way to the studio. I was walking down the street. And the traffic was something terrible.
Oh, for Pete's sake.
When all of a sudden a panhandler walked up and asked me for a nickel for a cup of coffee, so I gave it to him.
Oh, fine. Now listen, Virgil.
Just then it started to rain.
Rain? It's a wonder it didn't thunder. Now cut that out! All right, Virgil, you gave the panhandler a nickel, so what happened?
It was a lead nickel, so he took out his gun and killed me.
Oh! I thank you. Oh.